Chapter 8. The Empress Cafe.
What exactly do you hope to achieve by all these visits?
Sidney Grice demanded. I clipped the chain around my neck. It was my lightest cloak, yet still too heavy for the oppressive summer heat. But I might as well have run naked down Oxford Street for the way my godfather would have reacted if I had set foot outside without one. Molly was sitting on the floor dusting the undersurface of the hall table where her employer had been furious to discover a flake of a suspect's dandruff that had gone missing 6 weeks ago. I do not know. I picked my bonnet off the hall table and he shook his head. But if you only looked for clues where you expected to find them, you would never find any. I put the bonnet back. My guardian tossed his head to flick back his thick black hair.
On the contrary, 84¼% of the clues I seek are exactly where I expect them to be. It is only the remaining 15¾% that make my job interesting.
I not never had a clue, Molly said wistfully. Everybody says so, even people. Do they taste good?
Not usually. I put on my other bonnet, and my guardian treated me to a that-will-have-to-do shrug. Ignoring Molly, he continued,
Of course, the real challenge lies in calculating what the clues mean.
He turned his back on me and twisted the handle of his periscope stick to view me through it.
Don't not you know neither?
Molly lunged at a cobweb on the gas mantel, and it floated out of reach unscathed.
Ox-brained sloven!
Mr. G. growled irritably. Molly grinned.
Oxes is very clever, ain't they, sir?
They are not famous for it. I selected a parasol from the stand and Mr. G. edged back uneasily. But Molly was undeterred by my information.
And that's where London is, ain't it not? In sloven England.
Sidney Grice clipped the ferrule back over the lens of his cane.
I am talking about the deductive process, he snapped.
You are not the only one who can do that. I opened the door, disappointed to find no cooling breeze. For instance, I can deduce that you have recently acquired a navy blue cravat with paler blue polkas. My godfather cocked his head to one side, and then the other like an intelligent terrier.
How on earth can you know that?
By doing what you are always trying to persuade me to do, using my senses. He followed my gaze and saw Spirit coming down the stairs, dragging a frayed length of silk as proudly as if she had caught a rat.
That dratted animal!
The sun blazed, and because there was no need for domestic fires, the sky was almost blue through the factory fumes hanging in the atmosphere. Ladies, I reminded him, and stepped out into the filthy acridness that Londoners call air.
I shall get rid of that creature once and for all,
he threatened, shutting the door firmly, and I might have believed him if I had not occasionally caught him playing with her. It was not far to Montague Place, and I liked to walk, watching the children racing with the hoop of a barrel in the street, listening to the vendors peddling their wares, beef sandwiches, coloured bottles, linnets in willow wicker cages, and little Betty, from whom I purchased a sprig of lavender, at her usual patch on the corner of Torrington Place. The Empress Cafe was quite a large establishment, and almost always busy. If truth be told, I was half convinced that my guardian was right. I had no idea who or what I was looking for, but if it was important enough for Johnny Wallace to use his dying breath, I thought I should at least try. Besides, I rather liked it there. The decor was cheerful and modern, with green floral tiles and paintings of Paris on the walls. It was difficult to imagine that the City of Lights had been in the grips of starvation and terror scarcely more than a decade ago. The manager may have been sullen, but his employees were quick and amiable, and ladies who sat away from the windows were allowed to smoke. I was shown a table in the far corner, and ordered a pot of coffee before settling down to survey the other customers and try, as always, to work out what constituted suspicious behaviour. The unshaven man immersed in a broken-backed novel. He had been at the same table by the cake counter every day. Was he waiting for Johnny? The woman in grey with a brown paper parcel. She was obviously ill at ease. Was she going to deliver something? Mine was a fruitless task. My coffee had just arrived when the doorbell clanked and two women came in. A petite, pale young lady, struggling on crutches, with her companion, slightly taller, statuesque and heavily veiled, arms linked to support her. The companion was engaged in an animated conversation with the waitress, and I saw that they were being turned away. I hurried over. "Is there a problem?" The woman on crutches was clearly having considerable difficulty standing up.
"Apparently they are full," she said hoarsely.
She was in her mid-twenties, I guessed, and her face was badly scratched and bruised. Her friend's veil puzzled me. It was Lincoln green, and I had never seen one so impenetrable, except in black for deepest mourning. "It is too bad," emerged a light feminine voice from behind the gauze. The waitress was pink.
"The manager says I mustn't push people onto tables that are already occupied. Customers don't care for it."
"These ladies are my guests," I said. "If you can make it to the back there."
"For a half-decent beverage, I could make it onto the roof,"
the woman with crutches avowed, and struggled between the chairs and parcels on the floor to flop, exhausted but triumphant, at my table.
"This is very good of you."
She propped her crutches against the wall. "Two coffees and iced buns," her companion ordered, and the waitress hurried away. "March Middleton," I introduced myself. "March." The lady with the crutches held out her hand. She had masses of curly blonde hair, topped by a neat periwinkle blue bonnet, and a sweet face, but the more I looked at her, the more damage I saw. Her right cheekbone was indented, and she had a healing split in her upper lip.
"Bocking," she said in her croaky voice. "Lucy Bocking."
"I am pleased to meet you."
I turned to her companion.
"Might as well get it over with."
She lifted the veil up over her hat, and I am ashamed to confess that I shot my hand to my mouth. It was difficult to judge her age, for her face was shriveled, not by time, but partly eaten as if by acid. Her eyebrows and eyelashes were missing, and part of her upper left eyelid. And her skin was yellowed by streaks of scar tissue between angry scarlet pools of tissue paper skin.
"Frida Wilde."
She gazed straight at me, daring me not to look away.
"Friends call me Freddy."
Her right hand looked normal as it extended towards me, and her grip was strong.
"How do you do, Freddy? Do you mind if I smoke?"
She smiled lopsidedly.
"I would mind more if you did not."
And she delved into her voluminous handbag.
"Have one of mine." I held out my father's silver case. "If you do not mind Turkish, I find they have more flavour."
Freddy took one, but Lucy shook her head.
"Not for me, but please do not let me stop you."
Freddy was already lighting hers and held out the lucifer for me.
"Is there a greater pleasure than your first cigarette of the day?"
I sucked deep into my lungs.
"None that I can think of," Freddy agreed. "But this is at least my sixth."
The waitress returned with more cups and another pot, and she was taking them off her tray when she caught sight of Freddy and slopped coffee on the tablecloth.
"Oh, I'm so sorry. Shall I change the cloth?"
"Do not trouble."
Freddy waved her away and added,
"At least she did not scream."
I did not know what to say to that.
"Have you never smoked?"
I asked Lucy.
"Like Woking Crematorium," she replied. "But I find tobacco irritates my throat at present."
"You have a cold?"
Lucy's white face coloured, and something struggled its way across it, a mixture of hate and fear that fought its way into her mouth as she choked out the words.
"You think a cold did this?"
She indicated her crutches and her broken cheek.
"A man did this?"
she cried out as she touched her throat. "Or a vile creature posing as one..."